This text was prepared by Judy Boss, Omaha, Northeast. Note: I have made the following changes to the text. Page line original changed to 4525 commander in 155-35 I 253-20 fair and fair on 283-5 I greater than Vastri ANELLI less than I greater than. Ivastri ANELLI less than I greater than. A set of six, by Joseph Conrad, Les Petites Marionettes font, Trois Petites Tours et Puce Saint Vant. Nursery rhyme. To Miss M.H. M. Capes, page intentionally blank. Author's note, the six stories in this volume are the result of some 3 or 4 years of occasional work. The dates of their writing are far apart, their origins are various. None of them are connected directly with personal experiences. In all of them the facts are inherently true, by which I mean, that they are not only possible, but that they have actually happened. For instance, the last story in the volume, the one I call Pathetic, whose first title is Ill-Conned, misspelt by the by, is an almost verbatim transcript of the tale, told me by a very charming old gentleman whom I met in Italy. I don't mean to say it is only that. Anybody can see that it is something more than a verbatim report, but where he left off, and where I began, must be left to the acute discrimination of the reader who may be interested in the problem. I don't mean to say that the problem is worth the trouble. What I am certain of, however, is that it is not to be solved, for I am not at all clear about it myself by this time. All I can say is that the personality of the narrator was extremely suggestive quite apart from the story he was telling me. I heard a few years ago that he had died far away from his beloved Naples, where that abominable adventure did really happen to him. Thus the genealogy of Ill-Conned is simple. It is not the case with the other stories. Various strains contributed to their composition, and the nature of many of those I have forgotten, not having the habit of making notes either before or after the fact. I mean the fact of writing a story. What I remember best about Gaspar Ruse is that it was written, or at any rate begun, within a month of finishing Nostromo. But apart from the locality, and that a pretty wide one, all the South American continent, the novel and the story have nothing in common, neither mood, nor intention, and, certainly, not the style. The manner for the most part is that of General Santiera, and that old warrior, I note with satisfaction, is very true to himself all through. Looking now dispassionately at the various ways in which this story could have been presented, I can't honestly think the general superfluous. It is he, an old man talking of the days of his youth, who characterizes the whole narrative, and gives it an air of actuality which I doubt whether I could have achieved without his help. In the mere writing his existence of course was of no help at all, because the whole thing had to be carefully kept within the frame of his simple mind. But all this is but a laborious searching of memories. My present feeling is that the story could not have been told otherwise. The hint for Gaspar Ruse, the man I found in a book by Captain Basil Hall, R.N.N., who was for some time, between the years 1824 and 1828, senior officer of a small British squadron on the west coast of South America. His book published in the 30s obtained a certain celebrity and I suppose, is to be found still in some libraries. The curious who may be mistrusting my imagination are referred to that printed document, Vol. 2, I forget the page, but it is somewhere not far from the end. Another document connected with this story is a letter of a biting and ironic kind from a friend then in Burma, passing certain strictures upon the gentleman with the gun on his back which I do not intend to make accessible to the public. Yet the gun episode did really happen, or at least I am bound to believe it, because I remember it, described in an extremely matter-of-fact tone, in some book I read in my boyhood, and I am not going to discard the beliefs of my boyhood for anybody on earth. The brute, which is the only C story in the volume, is, like Ilkhand, associated with a direct narrative, and based on a suggestion gathered on warm human lips. I will not disclose the real name of the criminal ship, but the first I heard of her homicidal habits was from the late Captain Blake, commanding a London ship in which I served in 1884 as second officer. Captain Blake was, of all my commanders, the one I remember with the greatest affection. I have sketched in his personality, without however mentioning his name, in the first paper of the Mirror of the Sea. In his young days he had had a personal experience of the brute, and it is perhaps for that reason that I have put the story into the mouth of a young man and made of it what the reader will see. The existence of the brute was a fact. The end of the brute as related in the story is also a fact, well known at the time, though it really happened to another ship, of great beauty of form, and of blameless character, which certainly deserved a better fate. I have unscrupulously adapted it to the needs of my story, thinking that I had there something in the nature of poetical justice. I hope that little villainy will not cast a shadow upon the general honesty of my proceedings as a writer of tales. Of the informer and an anarchist I will say next to nothing. The pedigree of these tales is hopelessly complicated, and not worth disentangling at this distance of time. I found them, and here they are. The discriminating reader will guess that I have found them within my mind, but how they or their elements came in there I have forgotten for the most part, and for the rest I really don't see why I should give myself away more than I have done already. It remains for me only now to mention the duel, the longest story in the book. That story attained the dignity of publication all by itself in a small illustrated volume, under the title, The Point of Honor. That was many years ago. It has been since reinstated in its proper place, which is the place it occupies in this volume, in all the subsequent editions of my work. Its pedigree is extremely simple. It springs from a 10-line paragraph in a small provincial paper published in the south of France. That paragraph, occasioned by a duel with a fatal ending between two well-known Parisian personalities, referred for some reason or other to the well-known fact of two officers in Napoleon's Grand Army having fought a series of duels in the midst of great wars, and on some feudal pretext. The pretext was never disclosed. I had therefore to invent it. And I think that, given the character of the two officers which I had to invent to, I have made it sufficiently convincing by the mere force of its absurdity. The truth is that in my mind the story is nothing but a serious, and even earnest attempt at a bit of historical fiction. I had heard in my boyhood a good deal of the great Napoleonic legend. I had a genuine feeling that I would find myself at home in it, and the duel is the result of that feeling, or, if the reader prefers, of that presumption. Personally, I have no qualms of conscience about this piece of work. The story might have been better told, of course. All one's work might have been better done, but this is the sort of reflection a worker must put aside courageously, if he doesn't mean every one of his conceptions to remain forever a private vision, an evanescent reverie. How many of those visions have I seen vanish in my time? This one, however, has remained, a testimony, if you like, to my courage or a proof of my rashness. What I care to remember best is the testimony of some French readers who volunteered the opinion that in those 100 pages or so I had managed to render wonderfully the spirit of the whole epic. Exaggeration of kindness, no doubt, but even so I hug it still to my breast, because in truth, that is exactly what I was trying to capture in my small net. The spirit of the epic, never purely militarist in the long clash of arms, youthful, almost childlike in its exaltation of sentiment, naively heroic in its faith. 1920. J. C. Contents. Gasparouz, The Informer, The Brute, An Anarchist, The Duel, Illinois Cond, A Set of Six. A set of six, Gasparus, a revolutionary war raises many strange characters out of the obscurity which is the common lot of humble lives, in an undisturbed state of society. Certain individualities grow into fame through their vices and their virtues, or simply by their actions, which may have a temporary importance, and then they become forgotten. The names of a few leaders alone survive the end of armed strife, and are further preserved in history, so that, vanishing from men's active memories, they still exist in books. The name of General Santiera attained that cold paper and ink immortality. He was a South American of good family, and the books published in his lifetime numbered him amongst the liberators of that continent from the oppressive rule of Spain. That long contest, waged for independence on one side, and for dominion on the other, developed in the course of years, and the vicissitudes of changing fortune the fierceness and inhumanity of a struggle for life. All feelings of pity and compassion disappeared in the growth of political hatred. And, as is usual in war, the mass of the people, who at the least, to gain by the issue, suffered most in their obscure persons and their humble fortunes. General Santiera began his service as lieutenant in the Patriot Army raised and commanded by the famous San Martin, afterwards conqueror of Lima and liberator of Peru. A great battle had just been fought on the banks of the river Biobío. Amongst the prisoners made upon the routed royalist troops there was a soldier called Gasparus. His powerful build and his big head rendered him remarkable amongst his fellow captives. The personality of the man was unmistakable. Some months before he had been missed from the ranks of Republican troops after one of the many skirmishes which preceded the great battle. And now, having been captured arms in hand amongst royalists, he could expect no other fate but to be shot as a deserter. Gasparus, however, was not a deserter. His mind was hardly active enough to take a discriminating view of the advantages or perils of treachery. Why should he change sides? He had really been made a prisoner, had suffered ill usage and many privations. Neither side showed tenderness to its adversaries. There came a day when he was ordered, together with some other captured rebels, to march in the front rank of the royal troops. A musket had been thrust into his hands. He had taken it. He had marched. He did not want to be killed with circumstances of peculiar atrocity for refusing to march. He did not understand heroism, but it was his intention to throw his musket away at the first opportunity. Meantime, he had gone on loading and firing, from fear of having his brains blown out at the first sign of unwillingness, by some non-commissioned officer of the King of Spain. He tried to set forth these elementary considerations before the sergeant of the guard set over him, and some 20 other such deserters, who had been condemned summarily to be shot. It was in the quadrangle of the fort at the back of the batteries which command the roadstead of Valparaiso. The officer who had identified him had gone on without listening to his protestations. His doom was sealed. His hands were tied very tightly together. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.